All right, Etrachier here, Discussions of Truth. This is, I don't know what number episode it is, but we're in the hundreds here. Been doing these since 2016. And the reason behind it, back in the fall, late summer, fall of 2016, is that what I just said? 2016 was the Zika virus, and today's guest. I have not been consistent with the shows for a few months now. Late spring, early summer of 2022 is when I began getting into wrapping up the book. I was concentrating on that. Now, today's guest is really the reason that I wrote the book. And I'll get into what he's been doing, which is incredible. Really, he's doing amazing work, but of course, we pull back. That's simply all we can do, right? As Americans, it's really simply all we can ask of one another is that we just simply do what we can all do individually to bring to light justice, truth, for the country, right? For the betterment of the Republic and really the Constitution. I mean, the Constitution is under fire on so many different levels. Voting fraud is nothing new. I urge you to look at Vote Scam. Vote Scam is a book published by the Collier Brothers, C-O-L-L-I-E-R, that goes into the collusion of IBM and mainstream media and manipulating voting machines in the United States, going back to LBJ. So the 2020 election, you know, if you're sitting there or standing there, if you're listening to me and you're saying to yourself, that was the most honest and accurate election that the country's ever had, you're fooling yourself. You're totally fooling yourself, because frankly, I would suggest that I'm not sure how many, if any, election in the country has ever been completely without fraud. Certainly not of the past 60 years or so. The two Bushes in the White House, and this is all tied into international money, right? That's controlling the American country, the American economy. David Icke's a former guest on the show, and David will tell you exactly that the city of London is the main orchestrator of global economics. Now I peel back a little bit further and I say, okay, well, what's going on in Switzerland, right? So what's going on with the Bank of International Settlements that regulates central banks, regulates this whole system, globally. Now we have the onset of the digital reset, right? Digitizing money as we know it. These are things that I've asked, and it all started with the Zika virus with me. I'd been exposed to this virus that the local media was urging people to spray spray off, all these things. And of course, they were flu-like symptoms, right? The symptoms of the Zika virus are flu-like symptoms, and just a good friend of mine, rest in peace, now passed away. I passed away in 2019, as a matter of fact, invited me to a town hall meeting. And from there, I'd been invited on the Wynnewood Radio, and I started doing this weekly show. And it was today's guest, Mark Shaw, that suggested, after about, I guess, about a year, year and a half of doing the show, suggested that I do, that I write a book. Now, the book, yes, it's taken a while, and people like Zach Voorhees, Google whistleblower, a friend of mine, he's started and completed and published his book in the time that it's taken for me to get mine out there. But I do have an agreement with Trine Day. I suspect that that is in that the book is formatted. Chris has had the manuscript now for a number of weeks, and the last I heard, about a month ago, we were getting very close. So I'm hoping here, anytime, if you have bought the book, I appreciate you buying the book. It's on its way. It's on its way. I let Chris do. He's on his own timeline. He's an independent publisher, and I'm honored that he has given me an agreement. So I can't wait to have the book published. But I've already set out to write a second one. I've already started on the second one. I've got chapter outlines laid out. I've already started on the second one. So a second one coming. With any luck, I should have that. I should have large part of that written by spring. Best case scenario. This No More Lies, Freedom Reserve, No More Lies has taken 4-5 years to write. Things are not easy. As we know, none of this is easy, and you must keep pushing forward. So anyway, that's where it all started. If this is the first time you've listened to me, this is where it all started. Miami Beach, Zika virus. This was 3 years before the COVID fiasco. So this, this kind of manipulation of the healthcare system in regards to your body and how that equates to advances in technology, and how I see it as advances in the monetary system. This is nothing new. It's not going away. But there are other things that should gravitate to your attention. For instance, Social Media Freedom Foundation, Jason Fick. I've been working with him for about a year and a half. By way of invitation, really, Ryan Hartwig, a Facebook whistleblower, that got me involved with Fick. And since I've been involved with Fick, I've gotten Louis Gohmert involved, and he's retiring here soon out of Texas. I've gotten Jim Jordan privy to the situation, got him personally on the phone with Jason. That was during a visit to D.C. within the past 6 months. And now of recent, folks. So now of recent, I have Ted Cruz's office involved in looking at. We were on the phone with him for about 30, 40 minutes the other day. So now they are now looking at what this constitutional challenge. Gohmert was able to help push this constitutional challenge forward through Fick and his Social Media Freedom Foundation, which I am officially part of. And the other person that I've got involved is Kathy McMorris Rogers. I was able to sit down in the Rayburn building with one of her assistants and get some things moving there. So you can make a difference. Okay. I don't do this for monetary profit. I do this to save our freedoms, folks. And if we don't each play our own part and do something in our day, we will lose our freedoms. They will become obsolete, they'll be taken from us. Josh Yoder, U.S. Freedom Flyers, another good friend of mine, does great work. And he is one of the main reasons that you and I don't have to board a plane vaccinated. You know, if you're not vaccinated and you are opposed to the mandate, which I am, I don't feel that should ever be mandated on anyone. I'm going to say right now, it equates to rape. You can't inject somebody into somebody without their authorization and against their will. That is a rape. Okay, so a mandate on a vaccination is a rape. It doesn't matter what the age is. Okay, if you have a child that you've given birth to and you do not want that child to be vaccinated, that is your decision to speak for that child. That's my opinion, open to debate. But certainly as an 18-year-old or a cognizant adult, it is your choice whether you want to receive an injection of whatever it may be or not. OK, Okay, just like if you break your arm, that's up to you. You want to go to the hospital, get a cast, get it fixed, get a cast. It's up to you. You get a snake bite, go to the hospital, get some venom extracted. That's up to you. You have an issue, a health issue. That's totally up to you. It's your own decision whether you want to go to a hospital or not. So there we are with that. The other thing before I dial Mark in here. The other thing that is of interest here is something else, of course, that I've been working on is another project. I won't name the name, but it is a media project. For those of you that are constitutional minded, so now there might be those of you that are listening to me and saying, "Well, you know what, Ian, we need to erase the Constitution. It needs to be rewritten." Okay, yeah, that's fine. Let's do that peacefully through legislation. I personally feel that the Constitution retains those elements historically of what makes any government or society function healthy. So freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion, these are all core values that any high-functioning society or country, be it in this case, needs to retain in order to be a successful body or corpus. That's my opinion. So no, the Constitution, in my opinion, does not need to be altered or changed. But certainly there are amendments that could happen. The right to bear arms, for instance, that's a constitutional right. And what that does is it keeps big brother or big uncle, keeps big government small. Right? That's just the fact of it. That's just the fact. You know, nobody likes violence. I mean, not that I know of. I mean, personally, I don't like violence. But that's where we're at, is if you don't defend yourself against an overreach, or at least you don't pose that defense as an option, then you get overrun. Okay. If the United States did not have a massive military, which we all, if you're listening in the United States, we all benefit from, it keeps us safe, it keeps us secure. If you don't have that massive arm to defend you, you get overrun. You get destroyed. And that's just the reality of life. So Mark Shaw, I'm going to ring in now. I think this is his fourth time joining the program. Fighting for Justice, The Improbable Journey to Exposing Cover-Ups About the JFK Assassination and the Deaths of Marilyn Monroe and Dorothy Kilgallen. Mark Shaw, best-selling author of The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, and he did join us about 5 years ago to talk about that book. We're going to bring him on right now to talk about this newest book where he's connecting J. Edgar Hoover, Robert F. Kennedy, Marilyn Monroe, Frank Sinatra, and of course, Dorothy Kilgallen and JFK. Okay, bringing Mark on right now. I appreciate you tuning in to Discussion to Truth. Share with a friend. IanTrottier.com. Mark Shaw, ladies and gentlemen. Spoke to him this morning.
Hey, good afternoon.
Mr. Mark Shaw, good afternoon to you, sir.
How's everything in Florida? Where are you? You're in Montana or some damn place now. Where are you?
Yes, that's correct, Mark. It's cold. It's negative 5 at the moment. It's supposed to drop about 20 degrees tonight. Negative 25. It's an Arctic blast coming through. I think the whole country's being affected by this, but yeah, it's a little chilly up these parts.
Yeah, but everybody I've talked to that lives up there said it doesn't matter. They just love it. They love the isolation. They love not so many people. They like the beauty and all of that. I assume that's the same with you, right?
Well, I got to a point, and I don't typically talk about this, Mark, but I got to a point, and of course, listeners, I had mentioned, Mark, you are the reason. You know, we sat in that cafe in Burlingame. You suggested I write a book. That was your suggestion. Trine Day gave me an agreement. That book is going to press as we speak. I mean, we're real close. We're real close, Mark. And, the reason I decided to change the ambience was, just to kind of complete the book and let the thoughts process. So yeah, Montana's a beautiful place, gorgeous state. A lot of fresh air. It's one of the last, best kept secrets, perhaps one would say,
yeah,
in the country.
Yeah. Well, good for you. I hope everything's going well, and look forward to getting a copy of that book. I'll buy one of the first ones. Let me know when it's up on Amazon or someplace else, please.
Okay, will do. Mark, you are quick to throw very nice comments my way, right? You're very quick to compliment me, but you, sir, you have really gotten into what is one of these issues. Now, you haven't gotten into the assassination of the president per se, but some of the trails you've gone down have certainly run that course. You have taken on the work of Dorothy Kilgallen, where before you got involved, nobody was bringing this to light. And I think this is the fourth time that you've been on the show, Mark. And I know that you had a major movie agreement at one point in time. I don't know if you still have that, but you have done remarkable work you've gotten international attention, I'd assume, to really bring to light what happened to this woman. And from the nexus of the reporter who knew too much, you've now brought in, which is astounding, a connection to Marilyn Monroe. So Mark, bring us up to date here. What is happening in the world of Dorothy Kilgallen in 2022?
Well, it's an improbable journey, and that's part of the subtitle for the new book, Fighting for Justice, because, you know, frankly, I've had an advantage over anybody who's ever looked into the JFK assassination or Marilyn Monroe's death or whatever, because years ago, five, 6 years ago, I came across this remarkable woman, Dorothy Kilgallen. And all I knew about her at the time, and I admit this, was that she was a panelist on the popular CBS show, What's My Line, on CBS every Sunday night at 10 o'clock, watched by about 10 million people, which was a huge audience then. And she was great at guessing the occupations. And so when I was working on a book about Melvin Belli, who was Jack Ruby's attorney, you know, and who I practiced law with a bit in the 1980s, the gentleman who was a good friend of Belli said, "Well, you know about Dorothy Kilgallen," and she knew Melvin Belli. I said, "Well, what?" And he said, "Yes, she was at the Jack Ruby trial." And I said, "I got to look into this woman." Well, it was just you know, the Pandora's box, to use a good term. She was a remarkable woman, college dropout, became a celebrated journalist for the New York Journal American in New York City. Had her own column that was syndicated to 200 newspapers across the country. She had a radio show listened to by a million people every day. And she had covered the Dr. Sam Shepard case, which became the fugitive television show and movie, and the Charles Lindbergh case. So I started looking into Dorothy, and the first thing I found out was that how did Dorothy Kilgallen know Melvin Belli? Well, Dorothy was at the Ruby trial, and unlike you and me and anybody else who's ever looked into the assassination, she was there in the front row listening to Jack Ruby's testimony, not believing a great deal of it, in his statements he had made, not believing a great deal of it. And immediately she turned herself towards Jack Ruby, because she was the only reporter out of 400 to interview Ruby at his trial. And what he told her then, sent her to New Orleans, and we can get into exactly what that investigation was all about. So that was the first book, The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, which I'm blessed to say is a bestseller, and people still read that book a great deal. Then I found the Ruby trial transcripts and put those in a book called Denial of Justice. I'd also written a book called The Poison Patriarch about Joe Kennedy fixing the 1960 election. And then I was able to connect the deaths of Marilyn in 62, JFK in 63, and Dorothy in 65. And I was surprised that I could do that, because I didn't even know that Dorothy and Marilyn knew each other. But I was able to do that. And then I hit the mother lode here in February, Ian, because I got a call from a gentleman who told me that he was a legislative assistant to the Warren Commission member, Senator John Sherman Cooper of Kentucky. And he said, also, Mr. Shaw, in this email, I knew Dorothy Kilgallen. And as you can imagine, my ears perked up, because there's not too many people around that would remember Dorothy. So This man was named Morris Wolfe, a very distinguished statesman and author, and used to work for Bobby Kennedy when Kennedy was in the Attorney General's office. And he starts telling me about Dorothy and the fact that he went to parties at Senator Cooper's home in Georgetown and sat right next to Dorothy Kilgallen. And I wanted to yell and scream, and I said, yeah, what? He said, yes. He described her as a bright light bulb. He said she was even quizzing me during the meal because she wanted to know what I knew about Senator Cooper and the Warren Commission and all of that. And he said, yeah, and Senator Cooper, Mr. Shaw, I rode with him to the hearings at the Warren Commission. In his Saab, he was a tall man. He had trouble getting in there, but we went to the hearings. I sometimes could sit in the back and listen to what was going on. And then he started just telling me, nobody's ever got inside the Warren Commission, the code of silence they had and all of that. And yet I had an eyewitness who was right there. And he started telling me about things like the commission members know about Jack Ruby's connection to organized crime, but they don't want to touch it. It's more than Oswald, but Hoover and Earl Warren, the Chief Justice, pushed the Oswald alone conclusion. Lyndon Johnson wants to cover up the truth and move on. And then other statements that they were going to go ahead and release the Oswald alone report for God and country and all these kinds of things. And so I was just amazed that Mr. Wolf told me all of that. But the main thing that he told me about Dorothy, to answer your question, is that Dorothy knew about the corruption in the Warren Commission, because one of the statements was, let me find it here. The commission members say this Oswald conclusion is good for God and country, but there is internal corruption, and I don't know why, and that was John Sherman Cooper, who I found out was a very close friend of JFK's, and you know, all of that information was credible. I've been able to substantiate it through oral histories of Cooper's at University of Kentucky and University of Florida, so in fighting for justice, all of that's in there, but the scary part of that is that Wolf told me that Dorothy knew about the corruption at the Warren Commission. So as November of 65 comes along, Ian, she not only knows about Ruby's testimony at the trial, which conflicts with his Warren Commission testimony that she exposed, now she knows about the corruption and everything, and she was writing this book for Random House, kind of a tell-all book about the assassination, told people, if the wrong people knew what I know about the assassination, it would cost me my life, I'm afraid for my life and country, I'm going to get a gun. And all of that, and shortly after she got back from New Orleans investigating Carlos Marcello, who she believed had orchestrated JFK's death, they found her dead in a bedroom she never slept in, wearing clothes she would have worn to go out. An empty Seconal bottle was there. She had her makeup on, her hairpiece, and her just things that didn't make any sense. It was a stage death scene for sure, but unfortunately, the conclusion was that she had died of an overdose. I've proven in my books that she was murdered. There were 3 barbiturates in her system, not just one. But now, because of the new information in fighting for justice, I just know how much danger she was in as November of 1965 came along.
So my question, the preliminary question is this, Mark. You have proven that she was murdered, that the man that murdered her is still alive. He's been notified that you have the information. Bring us up to date in regards to that.
Well, one of the great regrets in my life is that he died about 4 months ago. I had been talking with this man named Ron Pataki, who we had proven was a confidant of Dorothy Kilgallen's. He was a Midwest journalist. People will read about him, kind of looking to be with Dorothy so that he could move up in the social circles. She unfortunately shared with him a lot of her JFK assassination evidence, Ian, and we were able to find out that he was compromised, probably by J. Edgar Hoover, because Pataki was in some trouble of some sort, and compromised Dorothy by giving, we believe, J. Edgar Hoover information about Dorothy knowing that the whole thing with Lee Harvey Oswald didn't make sense. It was more than Oswald alone. She knew about Jack Ruby, and she also told him, Pataki called Hoover, that she knew about the corruption in the Warren Commission. Well, this book she was writing for Random House would have had all that in there. And so the topper there is that, unfortunately, Pataki is dead, a very guilt-ridden, lonely man when he died, but he died before I could put him in prison. That Dorothy, you know, she was the reporter who knew too much, and therefore, you know, they had to silence her before she could publish that book.
And Marilyn was the actress who knew too much. We'll get into her in a minute, but let me ask you, Mark, have you been able to attain the manuscripts that Kilgallen was writing that she was planning to submit to Random House?
Well, I'm sure you have regrets in your life, and I certainly do. On the morning that Dorothy died, agents, and I have an eyewitness who told me this, agents or agents of the FBI or agents pretending to be with the FBI raided her apartment, her townhouse on East 68th Street in New York City, and confiscated her documents, papers, anything they could find at all, cementing the fact that Hoover had something to do with Dorothy's death. Those documents disappeared. I have been able to trail them to the New York Police Department, and I've used Freedom of Information requests. I've done everything I can to get those released. But unfortunately, with all of the crazy things going on in the world, neither the DA in New York or the police commissioner who I met with in New York City have been cooperative. But now that I know how much danger Dorothy was in, I'm going to go back to them to see if I can't find those documents. I'm just certain they're out there. I was hoping they would be perhaps in this new group of JFK documents that were released last week, but so far, having combed through those documents, I don't see the Dorothy documents.
Okay, well, at least you feel confident that they likely still exist. That would be wonderful. Let's get into New Orleans. What's going on in New Orleans as opposed to New York or Miami? What was Kilgallen doing there?
I'll tell you, you're so perceptive, and your questions are just excellent, and I appreciate it, Ian. You know, people say, well, it could have been the CIA, and it could have been. It could have been the Russians. It could have been the Cubans. It could have been the military complex. It could have been J. Edgar Hoover. I mean, it could have been Lyndon Johnson. We want to talk about the Warren Commission corruption and how those people protected themselves. But Dorothy, after she talked to Ruby, and unfortunately we don't have the material that she wrote, although she wrote a column about it, how nervous Ruby was and how scared he was and all of that. So where did she go? She went to New Orleans, and the reason she did is just common sense. I look at motive as a former criminal defense lawyer, and I've covered, you know, the trials OJ and Kobe Bryant and other trials and things, Mike Tyson, and you look at motive, and what happened? Well, in 1960, Joe Kennedy knew he was going to lose the election if they didn't win West Virginia and Illinois. So he had Frank Sinatra connect him with Sam Giancana and Carlos Marcello and some of those bad guys and told them, you help us win the election, we'll leave you alone when we get in the White House. Well, they did help, and JFK won. And then right away, I had an eyewitness at a breakfast meeting with JFK, Joe Kennedy, and Bobby Kennedy when Joe Kennedy ordered JFK to appoint Bobby Attorney General. And what did he do? He hated the mafia from the McClellan racketeering hearings and all of that. So what did he do? He deported Marcello, who had a $1 billion empire, illegal empire in New Orleans, to Guatemala. Marcello almost died. He got back in the country, and now Marcello says to himself, I got to do something about Bobby Kennedy. He could have killed Bobby Kennedy, had him killed, but what he says to himself, if I do that, JFK will come after me with everything the government has. But if I eliminate JFK, Bobby would be powerless. And the proof there is that that's exactly what happened. They never went after those guys again. And there's been some conjecture lately that, well, how did Marcello orchestrate JFK's death in Dallas? Well, he did so through those underlings that he had, those thugs there, including a guy named Joe Campese, who was actually the first person to visit Jack Ruby after he was arrested in jail. And so Dorothy had figured all that out. So when she was in New Orleans, I believe she connected Marcello, Oswald, and then Ruby with the one who comes in and silences Oswald. Ruby at trial, he won't let him testify. He makes him look crazy. And so they seal up everything, but there's only one loose end now. And that loose end for Marcello or Hoover or whoever it was Dorothy Kilgallen.
Mark, Kilgallen was hot on the trail. You're also pretty hot on a trail. It's sounding like Carlos Marcello, you've got Trafficante in Miami. I don't know who the kingpin was there in New York, but Marcello's the kingpin based out of New Orleans. And does it come down to a geographic jurisdiction that does Dallas fall underneath under Marcello's jurisdiction? If you want to take this president out, you want to take this guy out, is that why it's done? Because is that how Marcello feeds in here? You're talking about the voter suppression, of course, and getting, you're getting the votes up. That's another issue. But I'm just throwing out, is there a possible tie with the location that Dealey Plaza chosen? And I know you haven't gotten into the assassination per se. You're just getting into what Kilgallen has done and kind of finishing her work. But with that, what are your thoughts in regards to that?
Well, you know, I've done an awful lot of research in the last 6 or 7 years. There's 6 books on touching on the assassination. Nobody has ever brought up this geographical question about what the mafia was doing in those days. Again, that's just something I hadn't thought of a great deal, but it really was in action. For instance, Melvin Belli's main client was Mickey Cohen, the Los Angeles gangster. He had the West Coast. Frank Costello, who was a very close friend of Marcello's, he had New York City. Sam Giancana, who was the first one that Sinatra connected Joe Kennedy with, he had Chicago in that area, and that, so therefore they could help with fixing those votes in the 60 election. Santo Trafficante, I know you lived in Florida for a while. He was the kingpin in Tampa and in Florida. That was his territory. And then Marcello had New Orleans, but it stretched on to Dallas, which is not too far away. And he was able then to control everything going on in there. And we're talking about illegal activities with prostitution and gaming and everything else that was going on. You know, you can't mess around with those guys. I'll just tell you a quick story. When I was with Good Morning America and a roving correspondent and a legal analyst for them, they sent me to Philadelphia because one of the other kingpins was Angelo Bruno, who had the territory of Philadelphia and Atlantic City, to interview his lawyer. And that lawyer had agreed to talk to me. I was very surprised that he did because, as you know, there's a code of silence with the mafia. They don't want anybody talking about anything. But he wanted to talk about gambling in New York, in New Orleans. So I went over there and I interviewed him. We put that on the air on Good Morning America the next morning. It was a huge hit. And so the producer said, "Mark, go back and talk to that guy. See if he'll talk to you again." So I called his office. And a woman came on, and I could tell she was kind of shaken, and then all at once I could tell she was crying, and I said, "Well, are you okay? I need to talk to your boss." She said, "Well, Mr. Shaw, he started his car this morning, and it blew up." You can't mess around with those guys. Nick Pileggi, the author of the book that became Goodfellas,
yeah,
and so on. He gave me a wonderful endorsement for this, for fighting for justice.
Yeah.
And he told me one time, "Mark, don't ever forget that anybody Sicilian, with Sicilian roots, like the guys we're talking about, their middle name is revenge. They don't mess around. They have their own rules. And you violate those rules like that attorney for Bruno did, and you're dead. You violate those rules like Joe Kennedy did, and his son ends up, JFK, being killed." You know, really, in many ways, and I get very emotional about this, Marilyn Monroe should have never died. She got involved with Bobby Kennedy and JFK, and then was going to go to the media with everything they told her, including some national securities. They couldn't let her live. She should have never died. JFK should have never died. It was Bobby who was the one that caused all the trouble. And then with Dorothy, I mean, that's just a sad situation because she just ended up getting right in the middle of all of that. And her reports and her columns and her threat to write the book and everything is what sealed her fate.
So, Mark, your research shows that a day, if I've got this right, a day before Marilyn dies, there's an FBI release, and part of that document is that she was being watched or monitored because of what you just said, that she was going to be distributing information to the media. Is that right? Can you talk a little bit more about that? Have I got that right?
Well, it was actually a CIA document, but I had it wrong first as well. It was a CIA document. And, you know, what's interesting about this is that at the middle of everything going on, and it's right in the middle of the Warren Commission corruption, which I hope we can talk about in just a little bit, is Joe Kennedy. You know, Joe knew that that Marilyn Monroe and JFK were having an affair after she sang happy birthday to him at Madison Square Garden, that famous photo of her doing that. But he put a stop to that. And so who was next? Because Dorothy Kilgallen wrote an article about Marilyn the day before she died. And this was my clue to investigating Marilyn's death. She said, Marilyn is on the upswing. She's going to Hollywood parties. She's involved with somebody who's a bigger name than New York slugger Joe DiMaggio. And so I said to myself, well, who's the bigger name? Well, it's JFK, but that affair was over, and then I looked into Bobby. And this CIA document shows that there was wiretapping of Marilyn and Bobby Kennedy's phone calls. In fact, some wiretapping of Dorothy's as well. But it also showed that this torrid love affair had taken place between Bobby Kennedy and Robert Kennedy in the summer of 1962, just before Marilyn died, to the extent that Bobby had promised Marilyn he was going to divorce his wife, Ethel, and marry Marilyn Monroe, which sounds outrageous, but that's what the report said. And then in the document, it also says that Marilyn had it with the Kennedys. They both had dumped her, and she felt like a piece of meat, and so she was going to the media with that information, and also the fact that either through pillow talk or their egos or whatever, the Kennedys had told her that JFK, his administration, was planning the assassination of Fidel Castro. Well, it would have been enough if she went to the media about the romances, but they couldn't let her talk about these matters of national security. I mean, them telling her about it was, in effect, somewhat treason. And so they had to get rid of Marilyn. Now, on the day she died, I proved that Bobby Kennedy was not in San Francisco. He was in L.A. He and Peter Lawford, I have accounts of them being right there, very verifiable accounts. And they went to her home. They begged her not to go to the media. And when she refused, you know, she was dead later on. And I have a new account in Fighting for Justice by a woman who was very close to those I don't know what you call them, thugs that Bobby Kennedy was associated with, the Kennedy family was associated with. And she describes in terms that I don't like to talk about over the air because they're so nasty, in terms of how they set up the killing of Marilyn Monroe after Bobby Kennedy, when he left Marilyn's house in Brentwood, California, left the window open so they could get in. So I've proved that Bobby Kennedy was complicit in Marilyn's death. And again, you know, she just played with fire, and those Kennedys were so powerful, no investigation. Joe Kennedy covered that up as well.
So let's get into the Warren Commission, Earl Warren, Supreme Court Justice. You talk about the corruption. The first thing that comes to my mind, Mark, is this. And you've got J. Edgar Hoover, who appears frequently in this recent edition in your book. He was definitely controlling strings, but the name that comes to my mind is Alan Dulles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know, I'm not one who likes to, you know, believe in you know, the absolute truth is out there no matter what, and I've found it and everything else like that. No question in my mind, being a Dorothy believer, and trying to follow up on how she researched and everything out, that Marcella had orchestrated JFK's death. People can read Fighting for Justice and make up their own mind. Regarding the Warren Commission, that was a big shock to me when Morris Wolf told me about Senator Cooper's allegations and everything. And so I went back and I looked at, which I hadn't done, and I apologize for it, I should have, look at the audio taped accounts of J. Edgar Hoover and LBJ talking. On the day that, the day, 7 days after JFK was killed, about a commission. They didn't want it being investigated in Congress. They didn't want it being investigated in Texas. They wanted their own private investigation. And so they go down through these, candidates, you might say, looking for the ones that they can control that will go ahead, especially Hoover, that will say, hey, it was Oswald alone. Why does Hoover do that? If it's a nut like Oswald acting alone, then the FBI can't be held accountable. If it's a plot to kill the president, then the FBI can be held. So he's got a lot to protect there. And what do? They look at the different individuals. They look at Senator Cooper, for instance, who was a very close friend of JFK's. He and his wife were the first ones that JFK and Jackie invited to the White House. I've got a wonderful tribute in Fighting for Justice to Senator Cooper by Jackie. He was an honest man. He was a man of integrity, just like Dorothy Kilgallen, all that kind of thing. So they go down through and they look at these different senators, they look at the different congressmen, and they look at all these people, and they land on some of them, and they land on them, some of them they don't want. Jacob Javits of New York, he'll go to the media. We don't want him. We don't want this person. Then they land on Alan Dulles. And good God, LBJ says to Hoover, well, what do you think? And Hoover says, well, he's a good man. We need him on there. So they put him on there, and what does he do? And there's no question, because I have it right in front of me here, documents that nobody's ever seen, written by Senator Cooper. I looked at his oral histories, and I found these documents. And it was Alan Dulles who steered the commission away from the CIA. He didn't want any investigation of the CIA being involved in JFK's death. Were they? They really could have been. There's no question about that. I still wonder about the proof of that. But here's what Senator Cooper wrote in a memo, a Senate memo, 12-5-63. That's December the 5th, which is 13 days, something like that, after JFK died. Earl Warren asked me about the CIA. Do they have anything? When I told him about Oswald in Mexico and Nicaragua, he said, you don't want to mention that. He knew all I did and more about the CIA, but he didn't want anybody to know about that. And then you get the Kennedys into this, blocking the investigation. Because what they were worried about was Bobby, an investigation of Bobby and the Marilyn Monroe death, Joe Kennedy fixing the 60 election. So he writes, something strange is happening. Earl Warren and Katzenbach, that's Nicholas Katzenbach, who became Attorney General when RFK resigned, know all about the FBI and the CIA, and they are apparently, even though they know that, they and others are planning to show Oswald was the only one who could be considered. This is an untenable position. I must insist on outside counsel. And that's when I have this document in there where he submitted his resignation. He didn't send it because he was loyal to the commission and so on and so forth. But the kicker there, and I don't want to forget to tell you this, what I found is that Richard Russell, who was a senator from Georgia, and Cooper decided that they needed a dissent or a minority report, as they called it, from the documents I have, in the final report that would say, we don't believe in the single bullet theory. We don't believe in the Oswald alone theory. And they were guaranteed by LBJ and Hoover that would be in the final report, and it wasn't. Now think about, Ian, how history would have changed if that dissent and minority report had been in there. The whole Oswald alone, you know, that's all it is, Oswald alone in the final report, would have been changed where there would have been questions asked. And people ask me all the time, how is this relevant today? And I say, well, what happened back then? There weren't enough questions asked about Dorothy's death, Marilyn's death, and especially the JFK assassination and the Warren Commission, because they needed to ask these questions then. The questions weren't asked then, and so we were, I think it's the most alarming example of governmental corruption in history, the Warren Commission. They lied, and they knew they lied, all of these seven people, including Cooper. It wasn't the truth, and they led everybody to believe the big lie to this day. So it's interesting that I was able to come up with some of these documents, because you're right. You know, Alan Dulles was the main bad guy here, because he basically just moved the commission in a direction where anything other than an investigation of the CIA was conducted.
Yeah, and the thing that comes to mind from listening to and reading other folks that have done an investigation on that particular assassination is that JFK had fired Dulles before he had Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're on top of this. I mean, can you imagine that? You know, this whole situation, I mean, you've got members on this commission who, you know, are being controlled, and I don't mean that word lightly, by J. Edgar Hoover, basically, of Johnson, yes, but Hoover. He wants people on there that he can control. Well, he knows he can control, you know, Alan Dulles. Because, as you know, Hoover had this little black book, although it wasn't little, of dirt on everybody. The Kennedys, Johnson, everybody, you know, including Dulles. He knew everything, and so he can control all of these people. You know, one of the reasons that Cooper offered to resign is because, as Morris Wolf told me, they didn't even invite him to some of the hearings where there was witness testimony. He said, I sat in the back of the hearings waiting for Senator Cooper, and it wasn't the members who were asking the question. It was the staff that was doing that. And the reason that happened is because Hoover could control those people. So, you know, the whole situation with Hoover deciding deciding that they were only going to, there wasn't going to be a commission in Congress or in Texas or anything like that. It was going to be one that they could control. And Dulles was right in the middle of all of that.
I throw a name out for you, Mark, and tell me if it's this sticks or if you've heard it, come across it.
Okay.
The name is Francis Spellman.
It's not a name that I'm aware of. I would be interested in what you know about it and what I've missed.
Well, this is what I understand, and maybe you can talk a little bit more about Frank Sinatra. And how Frank Sinatra ties into this, but Francis Spellman somehow was a cardinal in New York.
Oh yes, in New York City, right?
Yes, correct.
Yes, I didn't know about the cardinal part. You're right, exactly. Interesting. Go ahead.
So one of the things that had interested me, and this has been a number of months, but here's a photo that I come across, and I'm not sure why I was researching it, but I come across a photo of this guy Spellman standing between JFK and Nixon. So you've got you know, two competitors here going for one office, and you've got kind of this guy hosting a dinner party in New York City. With the two rivals kind of shaking hands. You can find it on public searches. It's a fairly common photo. But then what I ask myself at this point is, okay, if we're looking at some of these mafia hidden, if you will, hidden organizational power, even manipulation, right? It's manipulative endeavors on governmental affairs. Okay, we know this, right? JFK, whatever deals are going on.
Right.
And I have to ask myself, how does that equate? If it does equate, how does it equate to a person like this Spellman that's got quite a bit of clout? In his religion, but also now he's moving into politics because he's got this photo, right? So anyway, that's where I was going with that. You can expand on some of your thoughts if you'd like. Otherwise, Mark, tell listeners a little bit about how Frank Sinatra. Now, when you go through this book and Fighting for Justice, one of the photos that really caught my eye, Mark, was Norma Jean, Marilyn Monroe is her stage name, with Elvis Presley, and I think they're just kids, you know, like 10, 11, they're just kids. I had no idea that those two people knew each other at that age. But you can comment on that.
Go ahead. Spellman for a minute, because I think you hit on something that's interesting. You know, I'm always fascinated with. The whole situation in Italy with regard to the Vatican and the Pope and all of that, and how they just basically were enablers when Mussolini took over there. They knew the truth about what was happening with the terrible, you know, killings of the Jews and all that other kind of stuff. But they just kind of dismissed it off to the side, you know. Well, it can't be that bad, and so on and so forth, and then on up to Hitler. I mean, they were enablers, and that's been proven for sure that several of the popes at that time, especially one. This whole Catholic Church situation, you know, and the Kennedys were deeply into the Catholic Church, and all of that, has always concerned me. If I decide to write another book at some particular point, I don't know that I will, I'm going to look more into the whole connection between the Catholic Church and the underworld. Because Sinatra always, you know, bragged that he was, well, I might not be Catholic, but I'm Catholic, and all of that, and he was such a bad guy. And so this whole thing with Spellman being with Nixon and Kennedy, you know, he's trying to play both sides of the aisle in terms of what he's doing. And I think I'll look more into, and I appreciate it, I think I'll look more into Cardinal Spellman. I assume there's a good biography written of him, and I'll see if I can't take a look at that. So I think you might have landed on something there, because that connection, that protection by the Catholic Church and so on and so forth of those underworld characters, obviously a lot of money. Frank Costello in New York was feeding a lot of money into the Catholic Church, and that was interesting. So I appreciate your doing that. As far as Sinatra goes, I devoted two chapters of him in Fighting for Justice. You know, Sinatra was a mafia wannabe. In the book, I've got his photograph with several mafioso. I mean, he was like Melvin Belli. He liked to say, well, I didn't have anything to do with the mafia, but the photograph, you know, they say otherwise. He loved to be thought about that. Belli used to go to Las Vegas and hang out with the mafia. That's what Sinatra did, you know, and he knew all those guys, you know, that were talking to him one day and helping him his career go forward, and then killing all these other people and all of that. You know, mafia back then too, it's interesting, Ian, mafia guys were kind of celebrities back then. You know, they couldn't be that bad, you know, Al Capone and all that, and so they were kind of celebrities. And so, you know, Sinatra hangs out with those guys, and then of course when Joe Kennedy calls him and say, hey, we need some help in Chicago and West Virginia, you know, and Sinatra wants to, you know, get in close with the Kennedys, and so he helps them put a connection into Marcello and Giancana, Trafficante, who was the money, whatever it was. I mean, you talk about people having problems with the 2020 election and people voting twice. Hell, they got people in Chicago to vote about 50 times, you know, for Kennedy so that they could win the election. And so, you know, Sinatra got away with all of that, except there was one woman who wasn't letting him get away with anything, and that was Dorothy Kilgallen. They were actually friends. Early in his career, Dorothy used to go to Barbara Walters' father's nightclub in New York City when Sinatra first appeared there, and she promoted his career in her column. There's a picture in Fighting for Justice of the two of them together, just as happy as they can be. But then she turned on him. She started talking about the bimbos he was dating and how he was a womanizer and how he was involved in the mafia. And all of that. He struck back and said, well, she was the chinless wonder. You know, she wasn't pretty. She was ugly. She didn't have a chin. He used a joke in his Las Vegas acting and it said, hey, if you run into Dorothy Kilgallen, do it with a bus. I mean, it really got nasty between both of them because she wasn't going to put up with all of the bull that Sinatra was getting away with and everything like that. So, I put that in Fighting for Justice because it's so interesting. People should know the background of the man who connected Joe Kennedy with the mafia. And there's more in there about him in terms of the kind of person he was and how he hung out with the Kennedys. I've quoted a book in Fighting for Justice, The Kennedy Neurosis. And it was written in 1973, and I'm very careful to use material that's close to the assassination. And it talks about the Kennedys and why they were sexual predators, that Joe Kennedy brought them up that way, and how they treated women, and how they treated their wives and their mother and all that kind of thing. And Sinatra was thrown in with that because he was just a womanizer who had one woman at a time, or many women at a time, and then just threw them away. And you know, he got jilted himself, as you may know, by JFK, because when they wanted... when JFK was going to stay at Sinatra's home, Joe Kennedy put a stop to that, and in Palm Springs, and said, "No, you don't need to hang out with a mobster wannabe like Sinatra." And Sinatra was banned from being involved with the Kennedys. So I call it a cesspool of snakes that Marilyn Monroe got involved with, and that's why she died.
And she was the actress that knew too much, and you have brought together. Yeah, when we first did an episode about the reporter who knew too much, I don't know about you, Mark, but I never thought you'd be connecting so many different dots here, bringing in so many different players.
No, neither did I. And you know, it's interesting. The Commonwealth Club of San Francisco, I gave a talk there about a week ago, and the man used the term crowdsourcing. And I frankly didn't know what it was. And he said, when he was introducing me, "Well, Mark, what happens is you put your material out there and everything, and then you hear from a lot of people who give you tips and ideas and enlarge upon what you've found out and all of this." And that is very much true. I mean, I'm so fortunate. I think there's about 8 million YouTube views of my presentations and interviews, including one at the Commonwealth Club that has like 400,000 views in a week. And so what I hear then, and I'll bet I hear it when your program airs, I hear from people who give me tips about things, like Morris Wolf. He watched a presentation of mine at a Dallas library, and that's why he got a hold of me, because he noticed the name Dorothy Kilgallen. So I'm benevolent to men of the truth like you, who put me on the program, because I'm sure that I will hear from people who give me more information that I haven't had. I'm telling you, it's interesting. I don't know if you remember the in the film The Irishman, De Niro, and that particular film, which was such a hit about the mafia and everything, and Jimmy Hoffa. There's a dangerous underworld character named Russell Bufalano. And today, as a matter of fact, I got an email from a guy who said, "Mr. Shaw, you need to talk to me. I knew I was a very close friend of Russell Bufalano." These things just come out of the sky somewhere or another. Although I will tell you, and people sometimes think I'm crazy, I think Dorothy sent me some of this information.
Well, that's, yeah.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, something's going on here, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a very blessed man, that's for sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Shaw. Mark, you have thrown listeners, say, a lot of information, a lot of stuff to dig on. So I want to leave you with some final thoughts, some final words, and where people can find your book, order your book, and go to you, have a website, whatever it may be.
Well, thank you. The website is markshawbooks.com, markshawbooks.com. My email is mshawin@yahoo.com. I answer every single email that comes into my box because, again, you know, I want to communicate with people. If they're going to take enough time to find my email and all that, I get back to them and I find all this new information. The book is everywhere, just like yours will be, I'm sure. But I think we both agree, you know, sure, you can buy it on Amazon, but if you can, go to an independent bookstore, because they're still suffering from from the whole pandemic situation. And so I urge people to go there. And I also then urge people, when they read it, after they read it, to send me an email. Give me criticism, give me praise, whatever you want to do. But please get in touch with me at that time.
And Mark, I just mentioned one name to you. He's a former guest on the show. He resides in South Florida. His name is Gerald Posner.
Yes, I know who that is.
You know Gerald. Okay. Or you know who he is.
Yeah.
Mark, until next time, thank you very much for rejoining the show. Discuss your truth. Keep up the great work. And looking forward to talking to you soon.
Well, thank you so much. And good luck with the book. Make sure you tell me when it's going to be released, okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Mark Shaw, ladies and gentlemen, this man is incredible. And you, he is, you know, there's a term, right? There's a term out there, and I reading and writing is something that's always come natural, I suppose, to me. When I was working on an undergraduate degree, which is what I've got, it was so easy. Getting through these reading, writing, sociology classes, they were just so easy. But anyway, I mean, the research, you kind of have to have a nose, right? You have to have a nose for some of these things, and of course, it's kind of like a hound, right? A dog or a bulldog. These are kind of terms that are frequently thrown out for an investigative journalist, if you will, and all of us are in our own right, or can be investigative journalists. I certainly never saw myself being a journalist, and I don't consider myself a journalist, investigator, researcher, podcaster. I'm just a guy, I'm just an American citizen I'm a freedom warrior. Okay. I'm a freedom warrior. I'm a justice warrior. I don't take kind to injustice, if you will. I don't take kind to that kind of thing. So, I try to live my life by a high level of moral conduct in regards to truth speaking, right? In that regard. Now, the moral conduct is subjective, but let's all live by our constitutional freedoms in that regard, right? Morally, the Constitution is the most, in my opinion, perfect document ever written, devised by men. My opinion. But seeking out and finding the truth, hence I open the show with Seek and Destroy. Now, in early days, I used to open with Grateful Dead and some other tunes, but it's been a solid 4.5 years that I've been opening with Seek and Destroy, and that is to seek out and destroy corruption on all levels, and it runs rampant, folks, and it relies on you. It really does. It relies on you, me, Mark, Mary Mahaney, for instance. She was the very first guest to join the show back in January. I think it was January, one of the first days of January in 2017. That was the very first show ever conducted on what became known as Discussions of Truth. Then it was the Florida Sun and Spray show on Wynwood Radio. It quickly, within the first number of months, became Discussion of Truth because Adrian, one of the managers of Wynwood Radio, which I think is now debunked, or they've gone on I'm not sure what they do now. But he labeled it, I think I had just gotten off the phone, gotten off the line doing a show with Ray. Former CIA operative, pardon me for not recalling the name. But I just gotten off the phone doing it was right by the Equalizer, just done a show. And Adrian comes in and he says, you know, what you're doing are discussions of truth, Ian. These are discussion of truth. And it just kind of stuck. And I says, okay, yeah, you know what? Ray McGovern, that was June 7th, 2018. So maybe it wasn't Ray. Had it been that long? I don't know. You're looking at a year and a half. Perhaps it had been a year and a half before that name Discuss the Truth stuck. I'm not sure. But I think it was probably after doing that show in studio that Adrian came up to me and said, this is Discuss the Truth. So it stuck. But there's been some great – this is Mark's fourth time joining the show. And again, he is the reason that Freedom Reserve, No More Lies was written. And he's the reason that I'm working on my second book, which is really going to delve into some of these legal justifying orations, or rather identities that developed from orations of ancient Greece, of Athens, Plato. I'm going to dive into that, Aristotle, Socrates. I'm going to dive into that a little bit in the second book. So as a little teaser, I'm going to dive a little bit into that. Now, Plato's Republic, of course, is incredibly difficult to understand. In Mark's book, Fighting for Justice, his newest edition, Ulysses is the name of it. is something that I guess Marilyn Monroe had read. It is that's another these old Athenian works that's based off of the Odyssey, I believe. These old kind of orations, and I'm not sure if that's an oration per se. I'm calling it an oration. Are very difficult to understand and decipher, but I'm going to get into that a little bit in the second book. But you know, for instance, in November 14th, 2018, Judy Mikovits comes onto the show, and this is, folks, a year and a half. This is 2 years, year and a half. This is a year and a half. This is a year and a half before the COVID-19 issue starts spreading, right? This is a year and a half before that. And Judy Mikovits is coming on the show. She's the virologist, of course. And she says, America needs a revolution. That is how dire that woman, of course, I believe was jailed for publishing her own research. The other thing I want to mention to Mark is the name Anthony Sutton. Stanford. And if you've ever listened and followed the research that I do, Anthony Sutton is really the backbone upon which I do all of my work. What's interesting is that Mark had mentioned both sides. You know, he's visualizing, and I'm not sure if you've seen the photo or not, but with this guy Spellman and JFK and Nixon, right? He's got Spellman in the middle, and he's got two politicians, conflicting politicians on each side of him. And he's saying controlling both sides. That's paraphrasing what Mark said. I believe that's exactly what he just said. And what came to my mind, I didn't think to mention it to him, what came to my mind, and I may follow up with him, but what came to my mind was the Hegelian dialectic, Friedrich Hegel. And that's exactly what Ant Sutton talks about, is controlling both sides. You create a conflict, and you control both sides, regardless of the outcome of the conflict. As long as you're controlling both sides or all sides of a conflict, you win, right? You win. So that's a Hegelian dialectic in a nutshell. But you know, this is these if you go to my website, iantrottier.com, that's T-R-O-T-T-I-E-R, Paul Craig Roberts, former guest, Cynthia McKinney, Paul Hellyer, rest in peace. He and I share the same birthday. He recently passed away. Nomi Prinz, John Perkins, Stephen Kinzer. These are all people that have allowed me to host them. And like I said, the work that Mark does is incredible. That I believe is our fourth edition, and I know that he speaks with the Commonwealth Club there in San Francisco, a city that's very important to me. I've got a long history in that city, frequently. So anyway, please go to iantrottier.com. This isn't a moneymaker for me, folks. If you feel inclined to make a donation, I urge you to do that. I've got some advertisements running for Mike Lindell and his efforts to bring to light fraud in the election process. Regardless of whether you like him or not, I think his work is important. The other thing I urge you to do is purchase Google Leaks, a whistleblower's expose of big tech censorship. That's Zach Voorhees and Kent Heckenlively, two friends of mine. You can buy that book at Skyhorse Publishing. Micronic Silver is another product that I endorse. You can use the code Trottier. If you order some of that, you can take it orally. Great products. Provision GSH. Glutathione is another product that I endorse. And I urge you to consume that. You can order a signed copy of my upcoming book, $50. Just write me personally. When I get my copies in, I'll send you one signed. I've got somebody in Minnesota that's got 10 copies standing by for him. So, and yeah, the other thing that you'll find out is that in 2020, it was the 15th of October, as a matter of fact. I was with Zach Voorhees. I had been invited to a fundraiser for the then president, Donald Trump. And folks, I urge you not to take sides politically. Both parties are very corrupt. So if you can not take sides, I think that would behoove you. But that's up to you. It's your choice. As long as you fight to preserve constitutional rights is really bottom line of what I care for personally. But I was in Miami. I was in Doral, and I'd been invited to this fundraiser. We end up meeting the president's daughter, Tiffany. And I look her square in the eyes. I look her square in the eye. Hey, when you look at somebody like that, sometimes you feel, you reach their soul, right? You can kind of feel the flame, the internal flame that burns, if that makes sense. And that is an experience that I had with Tiffany Trump. And I says, get this message. That was Voorhees's message about exposing Google. I said, get this to your father. Well, a few hours later, we're still at Doral. We're having some food and drinks. And the president came walking in with the Secret Service. Ladies and gentlemen, the announcement was made. Secret Service swarmed the area. Ladies and gentlemen, the president of the United States. The president came walking in with Tiffany by his side. And she walked him right up to Zach. Made the introduction. And then there's probably 200 people in the room. Pivots to me, and I've got this video on the website, IanTrottier.com. Pivots to me, and he says, "Hey, who's this guy? He looks like a prize fighter." So that was it. I took it as a compliment. I think it was probably the tall brimmed hat that I was wearing in support of his presidency, and I took that as a compliment. But it's nice to have one of the most powerful people on the planet, if you will, to refer to make that type of a comment. So that's something that I experienced. Look, Social Media Freedom Foundation, I've spoken to Ron DeSantis a couple times about that. I've mentioned some of the other names that I've spoken to about that. And all I can say, folks, is this, is that the purity, if you will, the justice, the balance, the freedoms that we enjoy in this country, we were very, very fortunate. We're very blessed, if you will, to live in this country, which is very important to me. It relies on you. Its health relies on you. Relies on me. Relies on men like Mark. Unfortunately, it relies on people like Dorothy and Marilyn and John. And you know, we all make mistakes in life, don't we? But at the end of the day, If you simply make the decision to do something with your days to make the world a little bit better place, I think that's really all that can be asked, right? That's all that can be asked. So I appreciate you for listening to me. Please share with a friend, family member, if you celebrate Christmas. Christ Mass, if you celebrate Christ Mass during this time of year, Merry Christmas to you. If you celebrate Hanukkah, Happy Hanukkah. If you don't celebrate anything, Happy Nothing. if you celebrate the winter solstice, which happens to be today, and I think the actual solstice is happening in about 29 minutes, according to my clock. And that means that this is the shortest day of the year, and that is today, December 21st of 2020 is the shortest day of the year, which is the winter solstice, right? So, if you correlate sun and sun, like S-U-N to S-O-N, former guest of mine, Jordan Maxwell, is a wonderful guest, and he speaks extensively about that sort of thing. So this is the umbrella that we all flourish under, right? The respect and love for each other's religion. At least it should be. You'd have to embrace it. You'd have to agree with it. But you tolerate it. Okay? The Judeo-Christian values that this country was founded upon are incredibly important, right? But what are more important, right, are those democratic, diplomatic values of representing. I mean, that's the lifelong struggle, right? Whether it's Robin Hood, that's the lifelong struggle. Is this great balancing act to make everyone, you know, if you're part of a government, then you know, get your roads paved, get some basic care taken care of, health care, whatever it may be, be fed, you know, get some of these basics. Now these are made available. These are things that any American typically has some type of a door open for them if they are in need, right? And there's, but this is, again, that's the, that's what I'm equating that word to is the vote, right? So if you vote of a politician in there, it's going to best represent you. Let's make sure that's a clean process. And I don't say that I don't vote because I do, but I will say that's not a clean process. It's not a clean process, and it's up to you to make a difference and make sure it gets cleaned out. Seek and destroy corruption. So during this winter month, anyway, this is, I think, the first day of winter. Maybe wrong in that, but it is the shortest day of the year. Happy holidays. Happy holidays to you and yours. May you have a wonderful closure to your 2022, and may you have an incredible opening and duration of 2023. Until next time, folks, this has been another Discussion of Truth. Go right now to your local bookstore. If you must, order it online. But if you can, go down to your local store and purchase Mark's latest book, Fighting for Justice, The Improbable Journey to Exposing Cover-Ups About the JFK Assassination and the Death of Marilyn Monroe and Dorothy Kilgannon. And by the way, Nick Pileggi, the guy that basically wrote the story that became known as the Goodfellas, his quote about Mark's work is this: "The compelling story of Dorothy Kilgannon, the celebrated journalist once called the most powerful female voice in America." And that's what he wrote in regards to the reporter who knew too much. Buy the book. Mark supports me. I support him. We have been, I consider him somebody I trust. I don't know, we've met once, so that makes us friends, I suppose. But I think incredibly highly of Mark Shaw. I think incredibly highly of him. Please buy his book. Buy for a friend. Continue following what he does, because he's a hard hitter. So, wrapping up another Discussion of Truth, folks. Until next time, this is Ian Trottier. You can follow me on Instagram, follow me on Twitter. It's IanTrottier. Go to my website, iantrottier.com. Until next time, folks, be awesome.